Hello and welcome to Banking Transform, the top podcast in retail banking. I'm your host, Jim Roos, owner and CEO of the Digital Bank Report and co-publisher of The Financial Brand. In the past, consumers relied almost exclusively on legacy banking institutions for their financial interactions. Today, businesses across all industries can provide financial services with the help of traditional financial institutions or even on their own. Embedded financial services within the user journey makes the experience seamless and is really a benefit to the consumer where they don't have to actively do banking transactions. The question becomes, what role will traditional banks play in the open banking, embedded banking, and connected banking future? My guest on the Banking Transform podcast is Anthony Burton, Senior Vice President of Open Banking, Embedded Banking, and Connected Banking at Truist. Anthony shares how Truist will be embracing this opportunity and how this will impact the current and future direction of the bank. Embedded banking, open banking, and connected banking are all central to the digital banking transformation journey at legacy financial institutions. As part of the major technology modernization efforts, Truist is rethinking their distribution and customer experience business models to future-proof revenues and growth. So, Anthony, can you share a little bit about your career path before you've gotten to Truist and how that may have prepared you for what you now are embarking on at Truist?
Yeah, sure. Before Truist, I was at Wells Fargo for about 10 years, and the last seven of those, I was focused on launching our retail open banking at Wells Fargo. So I've been very, very deep in this space. I was also a founding member of the FDX Financial Data Exchange Consortium. Very passionate here. And then with Truist, I'm in Charlotte. Truist has their new headquarters in Charlotte. And it was a kind of a perfect timing of, I was looking for a change. Truist had been deferring their open banking stuff until after the merger, obviously. And, now that the merger is, closing down, now they're ready to focus and they're all in. And they obviously wanted to bring some folks in that, could hit the ground running and not, start from scratch. So, I've been there for about 3 months now and getting my feet wet and understanding the lay of the land there and what we need to do. And I think we're in a good spot to not just catch up, but actually, leapfrog over.
So your title talks about you're in charge of embedded banking, open banking, and connected banking. We're caught in the banking industry in all kinds of definitions, and everybody kind of defines the whole element of that differently. How do you differentiate between those three, or are they all the same at Truist? And what is the benefit of each one of them?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a crossover. I would say open banking is sort of the general umbrella that we work under. I lead connected banking there. Connected banking is underneath open banking, and then there's another side of that where it's going to be commercial. So for our commercial clients, having APIs that are working with them. And I think embedded banking is effectively a layer that spans both of those things. So having something, I would even say contextual banking as well. So it's something that's happening in the context of your journey when you're working within an app, whether it's our app, whether it's an app off of us, having your data connected and going both ways actually to provide better outcomes. It's not just a dumb connection, right? It's now, right. We're now like leveraging the data that we know about you, working collaboratively with fintechs or other applications to get more data to actually provide some insights or products that can be helpful for our clients.
It's interesting. In all the podcasts we do and in the writing I do for the Financial Brand, it usually comes down to leadership, whether or not somebody's going to be successful or not. And that seems to be very easy, but it's also very difficult because we all talk about digital banking transformation, wanting to become a digital bank. You mentioned already that, I'm not going to say things are on hold, but certainly the focus in the merger of BB&T and SunTrust was to make Truist real.
Yep.
And at any point, the prioritization of initiatives would take precedent based on the ability to bring the organization together, because if it's not together, everything else fails.
That's right.
That said, how is the leadership at Truist today different in the way they talk, the way they act, and the way they engage from a cultural basis and actually implement against becoming a digital bank? Because I know that was the foundation upon which the merger was brought about, bringing new technology to scale and that. That's a heady initiative. It's not just about changing the signs at the branch.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's actually a big reason why I even joined Truist. They to your point, they didn't take two legacy systems and put in and then put a layer over both of those systems, right? They really did create a new bank with very microservices focused. I would say the leadership right now is very, very eager to move forward. And you know, to your point, like knowing that there was a backlog of initiatives and stuff that we had to kind of defer until we got all of the merger stuff right. Because you have to do the banking stuff first, right? You can't just jump into right. initiatives if you're not doing your core stuff first. So I think we're there now. And I would say the leadership is very focused to take advantage of this new tech stack that we have to drive innovation, to move fast, to collaborate. I would say that, you know, being in banking for as long as I have, you know, I use sports analogies a lot, but, you know, you can say, you know, there's a lot of times where banks would say, hey, we're a fast pace or a fast break offense now, but you can have fast break plays, but you may not have fast break people on that team.
Right.
You still have people who run a half court offense. Right. And so I think the thing that's been super encouraging for me since my 3 months at Truist is that it's a fast break team and a fast break system and a fast break team. And everyone's very, 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 you know, locking arms around moving as quickly as we can. We know that we have some catch up work to do, but we're not even looking at the catch up stuff. We're really looking at long term and being a digital forward bank.
So you have an interesting perspective because you come from a legacy bank, but a legacy bank that's certainly ahead of the curve
sure.
as far as the industry is concerned with regard to open banking, connected banking, and embedded banking. You're coming in kind of aspirationally showing people where you need to go and hoping the faster I can get past where I was before,
that's right.
the better. And I'm not going to put one company above the other because you're doing it differently. I mean, there's when you're working from a clean slate, what you want to achieve is a little different than working from something that you already were working on. That said, what are the biggest challenges that you're seeing in the implementation of some of these new initiatives, and how does your back office structured to support that? Because the reality is when we talk about embedded banking, open banking, customer experience or engagement, the back office is usually the sticking point.
Sure.
We can make it look really good on the front end, but the way it's built on the back end is different. So what are some of the challenges that you're already seeing that you're going to be having to address, which are, again, I don't want to make it look like it's a Truist problem because the reality is it's an industry problem. As you discussed yesterday in your session, the MX Experience Summit, the reality is what is the challenges that you're seeing right now?
You know, I would say that the challenges are just that we're starting this. I wouldn't say that we have... you know, going back to the fact that we're very microservices focused at this point, we did just acquire a company, Zalone's Arena Software.
Yep.
You know, so I think, you know, I've been in banking long enough where we get data in, data out and all that stuff. We have a lot of data. It just collects dust, right? You don't actually do anything with it. It may end up on a PowerPoint, but it doesn't actually become an actionable outcome for our customers, right? So I would say the challenge is just, you know, now that we know we're very focused on data, you know, cleansing that data and analyzing that data to you know, provide better outcomes for our customers. I would say the challenge is just we're starting it, right? Like we're in the early phases of it. So we're kind of learning as we grow, but I think it's less the fact that the technology isn't there and that the willingness isn't there. I think that we're, you know, going back to the fact that Truist is definitely a digital forward bank. We can't do that without data, right? Whether that's right. connecting the data for our customers out to other experiences, bringing data back in, and giving them the outcomes that they need. I would just say the challenges were just in that those early phases figuring out.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned data. You it's as if you're looking at my script and saying, okay, this is where we're going to take it next. Because the reality is we all know that the foundation of everything we're talking about is data analytics.
That's right.
But it's more than that because banking traditionally has used data and analytics as an assessment tool, as a management tool, as a progress tool, as opposed to, and we talked about it before the podcast, as opposed to making it so that it actually touches the consumer. What is Truist doing? Because it really gets into the open banking, embedded banking, and connected banking.
That's right.
What is Truist doing and how are they getting there to say it's not going to be about better reports? It's going to really be about better experiences and better engagement. What are you doing? Because there's no financial interest, no matter how big they are, that this isn't really top of the agenda, but it doesn't mean they're actually acting on it. We know we're all in an immature state from a data analytics standpoint, but how is Truist doing that?
I think the best example or best metaphor, it's almost like creating a virtual personal banker for our customers, right? So we have a Truist Assist product that helps our customers. But there's using all of that data as if that was a human being who's looking at all of the data across not just your Truist relationship, but all these other relationships, and just say, hey, it looks like you may potentially need a personal loan. Yeah. Hey, are you really using all these subscriptions that you're using? And really just trying to be an advisor to them. I don't want to use the term robo advisor, but a virtual advisor to them. And someone who is like Truist is actually that they feel when they're with Truist that they have a banker with them no matter what. And so again, we're in the early stages of that, but I think that's really where we're trying to go at the end of the day is, we're very hyper-focused on helping our communities and helping our clients. And the best way to do that is for them to feel like they have somebody who is with them at all times, within their journey. So if, whether you're, leaving college and we can help you with getting, potentially your first mortgage or something like that, but it's less about pitching products. It's about, how can we help you on your journey, right? Like there could be insights that right. And that's all, right?
I mean,
that could be all it is. But we're really trying to be there for our customers throughout their journey.
So what is your relationship, your department's relationship with the people that actually are doing the data and analytic work? And I don't mean, is it a good relationship, bad relationship, but how intertwined are your mission? Because you can't go without them.
That's right.
And the reality is their future depends on you in many ways.
That's right. So it, 3 months in and we're and some new players with, our.
But it was a moving train when you got there.
That's
it wasn't, it wasn't at the station necessarily.
Yeah, That's right. So we're building that right now. But to your point, we're very highly cognizant of that fact that we can't do anything without them. One of the things I was talking about with as we're building our team out is that, we need data analysts on this stuff, right? It can't just be me.
We all need data analysts.
and the recent acquisition of Arena will help us with that too. And so, at the end of the day, I think we're tied at the hip with them. I'm helping provide the rails and the highways of bringing data in and out. And we need to partner with our data team internally to also then make use of that data one way or the other.
So you're located, as you mentioned, in Charlotte in the new facility that Truist has built, which is really, as I understand it, an innovation lab in a big scale. Was that intentional from the beginning, or are you there because you were located there before?
It helps that I'm there because it's a great space.
Yeah.
And the space was intentionally built for collaboration, not just with fintechs and other companies, but even with our clients, having our clients come in and prototyping stuff with them and just seeing if this is, resonating or not. I love that space. You walk in, two stories high, floor to ceiling windows.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And,
yeah.
And it really does make you feel like innovative, and which is, banks are typically, you walk in, it looks like office space most of the time.
Yeah.
So you're kind of going into a place that's really exhilarating. And I think it's a great place to host clients, to host other companies that we're trying to collaborate with. So it was intentionally built that way. And I'm just, lucky that I lived in Charlotte that I could actually take advantage of it.
So it's interesting, Truist is obviously the combination of two very legacy banks. I mean, if you're looking at history, you'd say they're about as legacy as they get. Employees, however, look all the time and saying they're looking out for themselves.
Sure.
They love their company, but at the end of the day, they're going, is this digital banking issue going to outplace me? How is Truist working with employees across the board, especially in your area, to make them know that this future is even brighter because of this, as opposed to, you're not going to find a data engineer in the branches that's been working as a teller or as a branch manager. However, for the branches to really help your initiatives, they have to understand what you're doing and the broader scope of that. How's that done at Truist?
Yeah, I think it comes down to leadership, right? Our leaders have been fantastic about saying, hey, we're one bank and it's a new bank, right? This is, I know how we did things at SunTrust, I knew how we did things at BB&T, but we're Truist now. And it's great for me, coming in because I'm pretty new, but there are a number of folks who've worked at both the banks for a while or in new roles. They're doing new things, and basically our leadership is kind of saying we are merged now. We are Truist. Like, we are not SunTrust and BB&T anymore. And that has really like filtered down to folks. And I think that it's also been really attractive for new folks coming in because for me, I'll speak my own personal experience. You know, it's tough when I had 10 years at Wells Fargo. I had a lot of political capital there. I knew a lot of people and that's tough to replicate when you go somewhere else. At least I know this space. So I knew that and they were bringing me in.
The midpoint of the next station.
That's right. And I know all the people in the industry and I'm coming with all those connections, but you know, still I needed to come into a new bank and make new relationships. Yeah. And the fact that a lot of people who'd even been there before are also making new relationships and in new roles made it feel like I'm not the only kind of new guy, to speak. Right. So, so I think that it really, the leadership's done a great job of really just saying, hey, to your point, we're not a legacy bank anymore. We intentionally built this bank to be innovative, to be digital forward. You know, we're obviously, if you look at where we're located, we're, you know, predominantly in the Southeast and East Coast, but there's no reason that, you know, our digital forward, you know, approach can't go nationwide.
So when you're looking at embedded banking, connected banking and open banking, how important, as you're looking at now, and even looking at how you're going to differentiate from the industry, how important is speed and scale of implementation? You know, we get into the whole role of saying, okay, we need to get this implemented this year. Well, the reality of the world today is we got to get it implemented in the next 2 months, things that in our mind would have taken a year, 18 months to implement. And nothing could be truer to that than the PPP loan process.
Yeah.
But it really is true when you're talking about coming in new, knowing at least partway where you want to go because you've been there, but also what you want to do differently. What is the importance of speed and scale, not just for what you're implementing, but all the foundational things behind you? They have to also go that way.
Yeah, I think it comes down to building the right architecture up front, right? So, I mean, I think, you know, my previous role, we were one of the first to go out there with open banking, and it was great. And we took our lumps along the way, but we did a great thing, and it was a great team. But, you know, truthfully, at the end, you know, with the architecture, we had a lot of first mover debt, right? So we were having to like tack on things and not have, you know, to your point about scalability and actually building a architecture that can scale. And so I think that's the big thing that I'm bringing right now is, you know, bringing my lessons learned and, you know, leveraging. I think in a lot of ways, the funny thing is that I tell, you know, leaders at Truist now is that in a lot of ways, it's actually, you know, better be lucky than good sometimes. And, you know, by deferring some of this work, it allowed FDX to mature, it allowed a lot of other things to mature, allowed a lot of the aggregators to be a lot more collaborative in this space than they were when I first started talking with them. So I think that, you know, as long as we have the right technical architecture, you know, we can, like I said, we can catch up very quickly and then just keep going because, you know, we're not having any of that first mover debt anymore.
It's my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that your roles in, again, embedded banking, connected banking and open banking, it's not just technology. There's a human aspect to 100%. That as well. But that human aspect only is empowered if you democratize the data and the insights across a much broader array than the people that do the reports at the end of the month. How is Truist addressing that? Because that really is a very transformational shift in banking, but also in how you share insights so that people can make decisions. I usually talk about the fact that, you know, with people opening more and more accounts digitally, your branches need to do the cross-selling because it we just don't have the right elements using a digital engagement to take it to the next level as you would in a one-to-one relationship. What is your perspective on the democratization of data as it relates to your role at Truist?
Yeah, so, you know, right now we're focused on you know, just laying the foundation of connected banking, getting our customers off of being screen scraped, right, and onto our APIs. That's step one. But to your point, step two, and this is really where it's going, is bringing, that's one path of the highway. Now we got to bring the other path in,
right?
So that's the other, those are the two prongs of connected banking and bringing data back in. And so just like any bank, right? There's a lot of line of business initiatives that uses MX. There's some that use others and there isn't really that cohesive data strategy that's there. Right. And so, that is what we're fast following on to with the migration off of screen scraping is, you know, we're going to be the partners of to all of our LOBs, to all of the other folks within our, you know, our branch folks or whatever, where we're the data experts. We're the ones who are bringing folks in. If they need something, maybe we go partner with somebody that they need. But we're that sort of grand central station of the data for them. So it's not just our customers data leaving, it's actually bringing data in. Both of those things, all that stuff, all has to be centered around client outcomes and helping our clients. So I think the strategy is that grand central, and we'll be that internal highway for our folks.
So before we take a short break, one thing I did, and I came out to you at the beginning of the, before we even got on the podcast, the fact that I was saying, okay, so you take one big legacy bank, you take another big legacy bank, and we're all of a sudden say we're going to have a digital bank that comes together. But I would say made fun or questioned the buying of real estate in Charlotte to make it look good. But it really does sound that has had a very instrumental role in making it so that at least within that unit, the people that are meant to really do new things in new ways are in the same location and feeding off each other from a cultural standpoint. Because if you're in one of the legacy locations, you're surrounded by legacy people. And that's not good or bad, because you need history in order to build, as you well know at Wells Fargo. But it's hard sometimes to put the other foot in the water if you don't have the environment around you. So has that really helped the overall engagement and what you're doing in the last 3 months?
I think that space is it really, because to your point, it's if we're saying that we're going to be digital forward, we're going to be innovative, and you walk into just your standard office space environment, it doesn't really feel that way. You can go to a conference room and you can do, but it's this open air, two-story area. Just by walking in there, you feel like this is a creative space, yeah. Right? And so
you're almost held accountable by your counterparts around 100%. You, because everybody's got to have that energy going.
Yeah.
Somebody lets down, they let everybody down.
Yeah, there's a little green space where you can sit on, you know, beanbags and just kind of chat, or there's swings if you need to go out there to kind of take a break or whatever. But no, it I think that, you know, again, kudos to our leadership of not just talking the talk, but walking the walk by giving us that space to be that creative, be that collaborative. Right. It does make a huge difference.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Microsoft. See how Microsoft can help unlock new opportunities at speed and scale through innovative business processes, delivering differentiated customer experiences across channels, innovating new products and services, and redefining new ways of thinking. Find out more at Microsoft.com/financial services. So, Anthony, opposed to traditional banks who have certainly owned the entire value chain, banking as a service players, embedded banking players, open banking players, really opens up the network from both a standpoint of who you engage with, yeah, from fintech firms, is either a provider or a capture of the insight from an innovation standpoint, but also from the standpoint of revenue. So as you're working with outside organizations, are they right now in the stage you are in this whole process, are they fintechs that are providing you the innovation juice to get things going faster and at scale? Or are you really looking just as much at, or more so, at the embedded banking component, which is providing the banking services to non-financials?
Probably both, actually. I would say that, I think to me, you know, we talked about this on the panel yesterday, where, you know, Jane asked, where do you guys think this is all going? Right. And I was just like, I say this, you know, quite honestly, I don't know. But I say that in a good way. Right.
Right.
I think that what we're really trying to do is once we create that infrastructure of data in, data out, collaboration, connectivity with all, it just opens up all kinds of use cases that none of us are really even thinking about right now. And so what's core to that are those data connections and that collaboration with folks. So I think it could be something where we're working with fintechs to not just provide innovative juice to us, but actually giving us data that we don't normally use for maybe underwriting or something like that, right? So, or it could be, hey, we're letting our customers do me-to-me transfers within QuickBooks or whatever. So I think that, but those are just the kind of like table stakes stuff that we talk about now. To me, I think the really exciting part is we're building a highway where it's just forest right now. When you build that highway, those forests get mowed down.
Yeah.
You get all kinds of shops and new things that start getting built around that. And I think that's the part, that's where we're going here in the next 5 years. And that's what's really exciting. And I think Truist is really well positioned to take advantage of that.
So you have a very interesting position. You're coming in as the new kid on the block, but having been around the block more than once in the same area, you're coming to an organization that had a pretty much an open slate, and you're building something that hadn't been built before. From an Anthony Burton perspective, Number one, how are traditional organizations right now, do you think that most are getting it wrong in the concept of open banking, connected banking, and embedded banking? And just as importantly, what is the stamp that you're going to put on this whole initiative that you say, this is what's been in my mind for a long time? Because you, this is an interesting role. I don't get the opportunity to talk. I talked to Varo, you know, and I've talked to others at the very beginning of their journey. And you don't get the opportunity very often to talk to somebody that has to go real fast with a platform that they know is going to work or not work and going to put their personal stamp on the whole thing. So between you and the rest of your team, what is the thing that, number one, you think that most traditional banks are probably getting wrong in this whole space? Number two, what's we done different at Truist?
Yeah, I think I don't know if I would say is being wrong, but I would say that it's more of a short-sightedness. I think a lot of traditional banks are looked at this as a risk play only, right? Like let's get people off screen scraping.
That sounds like traditional banking, doesn't it? Yeah.
Let's get people off screen scraping and get an API, and then kind of we're all done. You know, we fix that problem. Risk is out or severely mitigated, and let's move on to the next thing. And so, to me, I'm like, yes, you need to mitigate that risk. That is laying the foundation.
But it's managing as opposed to avoiding it.
That's correct.
It's looking at Amazon and saying, they said, oh, you don't have to return anything that was wrong size or wrong color at Christmas, knowing that that was not that big of a risk for them.
Yeah.
But I couldn't ever imagine a bank saying, don't worry about the overdraft charge. We'll carry you for a while without some kind of manipulation on the risk side.
Right.
But that's a major change.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, I do think you have traditional organizations who are just looking at the risk play, and moving on to the next thing. To me, the moving on to the next thing is the next thing within open banking.
Right.
So yes, you do need to mitigate that risk, but like, you know, we've done to lay the foundation. Let's now build the house and build the neighborhood and all of that stuff too. So, you know, going back to what I said earlier, I just think this whole area is greenfield. And I think that organizations probably, you know, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I don't think there's enough leadership thinking, hey, this is just the new channel that we're going to go in. It's, you know, we had online banking, you had mobile banking, open banking is the next channel. And that's the next thing. And I think that there probably aren't enough people out there in traditional organizations who are thinking that way.
So what's Truist going to do differently that's going to make a difference?
I think that we've got the right team to think that way. I mean, number one, I mean, I think we're looking to take calculated risks, right? It's still a bank, so we're not going to do anything, you know. But I think
we have the technology stack, which is really a major initiative
and a big reason why I came too, because it allows us to fail forward, right? So I think we're going to do things, and maybe it doesn't go out 100% the way we wanted it to, but the 80% is something that we can use for and tweak the 20%. Or maybe we try something and it doesn't go at all what we wanted it to, but it actually is something better, you know? And I think that's the thing where a lot of banks are, they're so risk averse of ever trying those kinds of things and taking those leaps. And that was a big reason why I came to Truist, because of that tech stack where we're able to move and iterate and make some changes that I think traditional banks wouldn't normally do.
Well, it's interesting. So it says a lot about your personal transformation as well, because you were doing really well at Wells, and they've done very well.
Yep.
But to take this next leap and say, okay, I'm going to apply this. I go back to my very beginning of my career where I went from a traditional bank to more of an innovation bank because they were smaller and they had to move quickly. But they said, we're going to give you the open sandbox. And it was one of these things I'm going, okay, I know some things I haven't been able to implement where I was because it's a big, big, big bank. And I was maybe not even ready at the time. But I said, at least they're going to give me the runway.
Yeah.
To fail, which again, it gets back to risk. I, as people that follow me on any platform know, I go with the embrace change, take risk and disrupt yourself, both from a commercial, corporate basis, but also from a personal basis. But that taking risk is such a big deal.
Yeah.
And the embracing change is, because if you can't embrace the change that we all have to do, nothing you're going to do is going to succeed.
That's right.
I mean, at the end of the day. So the real beauty of open banking, embedded banking and all the others is that there's some new revenue models that can come out of that.
100%, yeah.
What do you see as a future there? What do you see as a revenue model that may come out of that?
You know, I think that, without saying like certain products, I think the really exciting thing is the collaboration with fintechs to create new products. I think that's instead of it saying, what's another stream that's coming into a current product of ours that we have, or can we launch a new credit card and put that out in like a digital only credit card. I mean, there's things like that, but to me, I think the real heart of all this open banking is collaboration with fintechs. I think traditionally it's been a bit of an antagonistic relationship between fintechs, data aggregators, and banks. And again, I think, you know, truest at this point in time, a big reason is that that whole area is matured right now. So, I mean, this summit's been a great example of, you've had a number of banks, big to small, who are here. You have MX, obviously, who's a core data aggregator out there, and then a lot of fintechs. And people are just kind of riffing off of each other and just trying to figure things out. So I think, without being prescriptive, I think the new revenue streams are really around, how can we partner together to create some new products for our customers? And it's not—
And charge them for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, the reality is that is a major change. It's like you mentioned risk. I'm going to say charging people a fair value exchange, but we got to do our part.
That's
if we don't give it to the consumer, we can't be asking for fees.
And that's why I always come back to client outcomes. If we're doing something that's actually affecting positive change to our customers, they will gladly give value back for that, right? So you have to play that balance of being kind of creepy, right? You don't want to just be, you know, I know so much about you, I'm going to throw this at you right now. But
if you can provide value, and we talked about your, you know, Wells is my personal bank. If you can use that to show me that you're making my life better,
sure.
Just like with Amazon, I never worry about the Amazon data that they have on me. Yeah. I know they know more about me than I want them to know, but every day they bring value. That's what we have to do as financial institutions, you know? And, you know, when you look at this also, we're all moving towards some version, or maybe not, of the super app mentality. What is your position on super apps, the potential in the States, but even maybe subsets of that?
I think I'm just a big proponent of data portability, right? So our customers should be able to interact with Truist wherever they are. And whether that is through a super app, whether it's within whatever contextual experience that they have, I'm kind of like, let's see when we get there with some of that stuff. I think that, going back to what I said earlier, when, you know, by creating these highways of data and actually having data analytics and data scientists on that, I just think there's all kinds of new things that are gonna come there. I wouldn't just, you know, corner ourselves into whether it's a super app or not. I think that there's just so many.
There are only so many super apps, but it's a matter of where you're going to play in that marketplace.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we have a strict stance on that at this point. I mean, yeah. I think that, you know, right now we're just very focused on the creative and collaborative aspect of this. And then let's see where it goes. You know, I mean, I couldn't have, when I started open banking 7 years ago, I couldn't have imagined that we're where we are today, right? So, I mean, there are lots of things that have come because of that. Better data is obviously a big thing, which is causing or creating more and more innovation out in the marketplace. So as this collaboration continues, and it's that two-way, you know, handshake between fintechs and banks, I mean, I think if you use the last 7 years, where were we going to be in 7 years? I don't know. And I think that's great.
Yeah. So we usually take a longer term vision of saying, where do you think this is going to be in this many years? But from a Truist perspective, I'm just going to go like 2 years. Where, and not where you think it's going to be, but where do you want your area of Truist to be 2 years from now?
I want my North Star with all this is, you know, we have to fix the basics right now, or focus on the basics of moving folks over from scraping. But I want Truist to be thought of as a digital bank. I don't want us to be in a place where fintechs want to come and work with us. And I want us to be considered like the tech bank. You know, that, and I think it's not just my area. I mean, there's obviously other areas of the bank that are like that and are certainly positioned in the same way. But I do think open banking and connected banking is the heart of that stuff too. So, my thing is, I want the Truist brand to be thought of as the tech forward folks, and that, you know, all these Silicon Valley startups that are coming up, they're just like, hey, we're gonna go down to Charlotte go talk to these guys
and make sure they're possibly knocking on multiple doors. They pick you over whoever else may on the other corners of Charlotte.
That's right.
What stands in the way of reaching that aspiration that you have?
You know, it's just, probably just resource scale, right? I mean, I think that we're going to need bodies to do this, right? And not that that's a obstacle.
Right now, with the economy being in doubt,
yeah,
you know, we see some organizations scaling back,
sure,
just on an umbrella basis where they're scaling everything back. We see some doing a little bit better decisioning on prioritizing where they're scaling back. Right, but that obviously plays into the mix right now.
It does. And I think the technology stack is good that we don't need an army of people, right? I mean, that's really what it should be. You have a lean tech stack, right. You have a lean force that's over it. That said, we will need some more folks, right? So, yeah. And listen, we have full commitment from leadership, so I'm not worried about that. To your point, you know, obviously the economy plays, that's a reality we'll have to deal with. But
you can't stop that engine right now.
No, you can't.
You shouldn't.
We shouldn't.
That's the challenge I think everybody's facing going, the things we have to do.
Yeah.
We still have to do. And if we wait, the funny part about the economy is the outside continues to change.
Yeah.
And we just end up further behind.
And I would say our leadership understands that. And to your point, like we shouldn't move away from this while the economy is going down, and they aren't. So, so we're still moving ahead. We just recently had a great meeting with them and they're telling us, you know, full steam ahead. So,
that's great.
Yeah. So
that's also great when your third month and you're going, okay, oh, it hasn't changed because that would have like changed the cards a lot.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I was actually on my 20th anniversary with my wife in Mexico, and we came back and it was like that, and then got that news and I was just like, yes.
Well, yeah, and it's funny you mentioned your wife because I know how many, that's the person I have to answer to at the end of the day, is that, okay, this was not a bad move because, you know, there's always a challenge out there. Anthony, I appreciate your time. It was great meeting you at the MX Experience Summit. And even more so, I'm gonna come back to you. Absolutely. Really relatively quickly, because I think, you know, your trajectory, your intended trajectory, is on a 6-month basis as opposed to I'll talk to you in 2 years as I've done with many others. But I think that it'd be interesting to see along the path because what you're touching is really where Truist is going overall. I mean, your data people and some others as well. But but if those things break down, then we tend to fall a little bit further.
Right.
To the legacy bank. Now, that doesn't mean you're behind because there's organizations above you and below you in asset size that have the same challenges. Sure. It's just a matter of, can you do it differently?
Yeah.
And the benefit is you have this technology stack, which is the big issue.
I think we can.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Banking Transformed, the winner of 3 international awards for podcast excellence. If you enjoyed our show, please be sure to give a 5-star rating in your favorite podcast app. Also, be sure to catch my recent articles on the financial brand and the research you're doing for the Digital Banking Report. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to our producer, Leah Hassage, audio engineer, Sean Roll Hoffman, and video producer, Will Pritz. I'm your host, Jim Roos. Until next time, remember, simplifying the customer's financial journey is at the foundation of embedded banking and open banking.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.